The interior and exterior of the officers' club were equally ramshackle. Pressboard, tables, and chairs had been slapped together around the mud-spattered floor. One wall was covered in license plates from various states in varying degrees of rust consumption. A tall bar, also made from license plate-encrusted plywood, stood before a giant mirror draped with the flags of the five uniformed military services. An American flag hung beside a corkboard covered with photographs. The officers' club was crowded, some in and some out of uniform, looking every bit as tired and disheveled as those on line for the chow hall. A few of the bar stools stood empty. A Coast Guard ensign in rumpled blue utilities stood to grab another drink from the bar, his eyes falling across Britain and Truelove. He froze, staring. A moment later, an army captain followed his gaze. He shifted in his chair, tapping a buddy on the shoulder and gesturing. Truelove self-consciously made his way to the bar, as the room began to empty until only a few die-hard Marine officers sullenly occupied a table near the door. Britton joined Truelove at the bar, but kept the Marines in his peripheral vision. The bartender, a pale-faced, ginger-haired Intertech contractor, glared at them. Truelove seemed embarrassed to ask for a drink. Britton followed Truelove's lead before deciding it was ridiculous. He opened his mouth to order a drink when three more figures entered. The first was a goblin, small even for its race. It wore blue surgical scrubs, its broad three-toed feet bare. Its bald brown skull was covered with a small blue surgical hat and a face mask that hung from a large pointed ear. Tiny white dots covered its forehead and cheeks. Behind the goblin stood a young girl in a Coven IV uniform, the left pectoral showing the four elements surrounding a central eye. She was in the prime of adolescence, slightly chubby. Her head had been recently shaved. Recognition hit him as she approached, smiling at Truelove. He'd last seen that face slicked with sweat, panting in a stairwell, where a 9mm round had taken a bite out of her side. Harlequin entered behind her, seeing the recognition on Britton's face and smiling ruefully. Britton felt himself swamped, unable to speak. He started to stand, reach out for her, then thought better of it and sat down.
You must be the new arrival.
But you killed her.
This is your basic problem, which I thought I made clear on the ride out to Portcullis. You think you're so much smarter than everyone else. This is one of the assaulters who took you down. Turned out to be a probe himself.
The girl turned back to Britton. Her eyes widened. She swallowed, but said nothing.
I'm sorry. I didn't want to. I had to.
The girl opened her mouth to say something, then closed it. She looked at her feet.
I don't believe this.
Believe it. While you're at it, believe that you wasted a lot of time and effort and hurt a lot of people unnecessarily by running. If you'd just done the right thing, we'd have taken care of you. But you decided that you knew better. Did you honestly think we'd kill probes, particularly portomancers? Christ, Oscar. It's possibly the rarest and most powerful school of magic. We're not just gonna chuck that in the trash.
You faked her death. You kidnapped her. That's slimy even for you. How'd you manage it?
A good magician never reveals his secrets, Oscar. And considering that the law would have given her death, we figured taking her into custody was a step up.
It's all right. It's better than running. They train you and have your back. We'll be real sorcerers now.
How many times did you make her repeat that?
So much smarter than everyone else.
Sarah Downer.
She extended a hand.
Oscar Britton.
Take a lesson from young Downer here. She seems to have figured out some things you'd do well to imitate.
She's just a kid. You've scared the crap out of her. You've probably been interrogating her nonstop since I ran. Are you surprised she's supposedly come around?
Harlequin shrugged. Downer blanched, and Britton's anger immediately gave way to shame again.
You know, for a so-called kid, she's a hell of a lot smarter than you, Oscar.
Harlequin leaned down to help the goblin onto the stool beside Truelove. Truelove grinned, slapping it lightly on the back, and turned to the bartender.
You know I ain't gonna serve him.
The bartender gestured at the goblin.
And you know I'm not gonna ask you twice, Chris.
I'll leave. You can serve him your own damn self.
I think we can manage opening a couple of beer bottles. If you'd care to take your useless ass off to bed, I'd be delighted to oblige.
Chris threw down his bar cloth and strode around the bar. He thrust an angry finger at the goblin, who sat passively on his stool, ignoring him.
You know he's a damn spotter. Hell, he's probably running weapons out of the tribes. I can't believe they let him work in the cache. Who knows how many people he's poisoned?
Intertech and the army seem to feel differently. Now get lost before Simon brings your great-grandma out here to lecture you on the pitfalls of bigotry.
Harlequin shook his head. Truelove slid off his stool and went behind the bar. He rummaged around, producing two long-necked bottles of cold beer and a cup, which he set in front of the goblin.
You've got to cut Chris some slack. The tribes don't take kindly to our presence here. Most folks at the FOB have a tough time distinguishing between the goblins that work for us and the ones trying to kill us.
Britton grimaced as Truelove found a container of sugar and filled the cup halfway, following it with water until the cup brimmed, a soupy white mess. The goblin reached forward, grinning like a child, and grabbed it in his wrinkled, three-fingered hands.
Okay, Sarah. I've got to get to the flight line before I miss my helo out. You all set?
Yes, sir. I'm good, thanks.
Don't stay up too late. You gotta be up bright and early tomorrow now that you're all here.
I won't, I promise.
Jesus, Harlequin, she's just a kid.
She's a kid who can teach you a thing or two. Magic forces us to grow up faster than normal. If I were you, I'd stop thinking I was so damn smart and start paying attention to how things are done in this brave new world. Otherwise, you're in for a rough adjustment.
Welcome to Shadow Coven. The new Shadow Coven, anyway. We've just been reconstituted.
Reconstituted?
The last outfit apparently deployed to a bad end. They won't give us the details. We're still short, unfortunately. You're looking at all of us. Well, there's Richards, but he's passed out right now.
Him too?
Britton indicated the goblin.
Nah, Marty's just a friend.
Marty?
His real name is tough to pronounce. Nearest I can figure, it's Mardak Het Parda. Everybody calls him Marty.
Humans, no talk me. Only you and Dr. Captain.
I'm Oscar. Nice to meet you.
Oscar.
You speak English pretty well.
Better than any other goblin we've got. They use him sometimes to do terp work, you know, interpreting with detainees and tribal delegations. But most of the time he works in the cache. He's really good with the local flora, and I swear I feel a slight current off him. I think he's got a touch of physiomancer in him.
Britton concentrated, but felt no current coming from the goblin. Perhaps it was overwhelmed by Downer's and Truelove's strong magical tides.
Of course, they don't call themselves goblins. I really shouldn't, it's not nice. But you start to fall into it since everyone around you does.
No angry goblin, okay?
What do they call themselves?
Water baby.
Like that. Near as I can tell, he means children of the stream. I think it means they came from magic.
Marty nodded, slurping the last of the solution in his cup.
They didn't have sugar before we came here. They absolutely love it. We keep them clear of alcohol. They can't process it. Even one sip makes them falling down drunk. A full glass can kill them.
Britton shook his head. He looked down at his beer, then cracked it open.
Nothing for you?
I'm not old enough to drink.
No, I'm not going to tell anyone.
It's against regs. Harlequin says we've got to stick to the regs from now on.
Harlequin's not here. When I last saw you, the regs didn't mean a lot to you.
That was a long time ago.
That was a day ago, maybe two.
Harlequin said you might talk like this. Sticking to the regs is what makes us different from the Selfers.
So, Shadow Coven.
Each coven gets a name and number. We're Shadow Coven, Entertech contractors all. Welcome to the company. We're the one probe coven in the whole sock.
Prohibited schools.
Britton suddenly realized the significance of Harlequin's comment about Chris's grandmother.
You're a necromancer.
Come on, Simon. Show him.
Truelove's pale cheeks went crimson. He looked uncomfortably at Downer from beneath his narrow brow, and Britton thought he caught a glimpse of the same smitten look Downer had showed to Harlequin. Pushing the thoughts away, Britton followed Downer's finger to the floor. A largish roach lay there, crushed flat by an uncompromising combat boot. Truelove shrugged and stared at it. Britton felt his tide ratchet up. The broken, flat insect peeled itself away from the ground and stood, one broken leg remaining in the dirt and another dangling by a thread of chitin. It bowed to Britton, shedding the broken leg in the process, then turned a graceful pirouette on the bottom of its abdomen before flopping over on its back.
Impressive.
It's just physiomancy in reverse. They do live flesh. I do the dead stuff.
How about you? You're an elementalist.
How about you?
Portomancy.
Huh. Fitzy said as much, we didn't believe him.
Fitzy?
You'll meet him tomorrow. Don't mess with him. He's not a nice man.
Fitzy is asshole.
I've been trying to stop him from doing that. It just makes things harder on him.
Is he an asshole?
He's a good instructor. He'll help you get a handle on your magic. Gate magic. That's amazing.
Believe me, I'd rather be flying helicopters. That's what I joined the army to do.
You were a helo pilot? That's awesome. What did you fly?
They had me in Kiowas. I wanted Apaches, but I didn't have enough time in. I manifested before I could get reassigned.
You can't control it, can you?
No, not yet.
Well, we go to the SAS tomorrow. Fitzy says we'll learn there.
Suitability assessment. They test your loyalty and teach you to get control of your magic. They enrolled me when I first got here. Since you're a contractor, you don't have to raise the flag.
Raise the flag? What the hell are you talking about?
Medic! Medic!
They raced outside. The line out of the chow hall was gone. The front of the tent smoldered gently, melted canvas and plastic sending up wisps of foul-smelling smoke. Two twisted, man-sized masses lay in the trench, burning brightly. Just beyond them lay a young soldier. Two of his comrades were already stripping off his smoldering camouflage trousers. The bottoms of his boots had been blown off. The soles of his feet were burned in angry red dotted with black. Marty ran to the man's side. The men, kneeling at the wounded man's side, paused in shock before the larger one, a Navy Seabee with hulking shoulders, reached out and belted Marty across the face.
Get the hell away from him! You trying to finish him off?
The soldier continued stripping off the burning trousers, revealing the charred and bubbling flesh that had once been a pelvis.
Medic! Somebody get a fucking medic!
He is a damn medic. He works in the cash, for Christ's sakes.
He's a fucking goblin, and he's gonna kill him! Hell, he probably called the strike!
He's not even fucking Leighton, you jackass!
The CB surged forward, fist cocked. Britton stepped into the punch. It collided with his shoulder, and he caught the smaller man by the throat. The magic surged along the current of his rage. Instinctively, Britton reached for it. Truelove stumbled backward as a gate snapped open inches from his face.
I, on the other hand, am Leighton. And I don't have time to compare dicks with you. This man is dying, and that goblin can help him. You're going to let him help, or you and I are going to enter into a rather dynamic disagreement.
Britton released him and let the dampener take control. Marty scrambled back to the wounded man's side. He reached beneath his hospital scrubs and produced a worn leather pouch, divided into several pockets. He poked his fingers into its depths and found a fine green powder, which he poured out into his palm. He rolled the liquid in the powder until it formed a vile paste that stank so badly Britton wrinkled his nose. He leaned forward, and the CB jerked his chin toward Marty's hand.
The hell is that shit?
Trust him. Marty's very good at his work.
The goblin applied the paste around the wounded man's nostrils.
He not die now. Soon, go cash fast.
Britton and Downer lifted the wounded soldier as gently as they could. They carried him behind Marty, who scampered down the muddy track toward the combat surgical hospital. Truelove jogged alongside. The CB and the other soldier trailed a few paces back. The hospital was overwhelmed. Army doctors, Navy hospital corpsmen, and SOC burn trauma officers ran to and fro, fussing over a mounting flow of stretchers.
That was amazing.
That was amazing. But you're not supposed to use your magic until you've been enrolled in the SAS. You could get in deep shit for that.
Well, I'm just amazed I could do it at all.
Britton had called magic entirely on his own, and it had worked.
The dampener is incredible. Why the hell don't they just hand the stuff out?
Against regs.
And expensive as hell. Most in the SOC don't get it if they can control their magic okay on their own. But everyone in Shadow Coven gets an unlimited supply.
A SOC hydromancer appeared at the entrance and recognized Marty, moving toward him.
Dr. Captain, Specialist Lenko has Thunderburn. I give him bad smell herbs. He needs.
The hydromancer moved forward and motioned for two orderlies bearing a stretcher. They loaded the wounded soldier onto the stretcher, and he vanished into the hospital, the hydromancer following close behind. Marty went after them, then paused, turning to Britton. He bowed slightly, tapping his closed eyelids.
Thank you.
You knew him?
Specialist Cinco is wise. He dies. I eat his eyes.
The goblin turned and ran after them, leaving Britain with Truelove and Downer and the steady flow of wounded. The Seabee and the other soldier had vanished. They made their way back toward the Peapods in silence.
Thanks for sticking up for Marty.
How'd you two get to be such buds?
I've got some stomach problems. The docs at the cache didn't really know what to do about it, and the one physiomancer they've got is so overworked, he doesn't have time for something that isn't life-threatening. Marty gave me some herbal remedy. It doesn't fix it totally, but it really helps.
Yeah, he seems like a good guy.
He's all right. We keep him in sugar. He keeps Truelove from crapping his drawers.
Did he actually say he'd eat that guy's eyes?
It's a custom. They do it to honor their dead. They believe that if you eat the eyes of a dead man, you ingest everything he's ever seen, the sum of his life experience. That way he lives on forever through you. It's a high compliment. Of course, try telling that to our forward squads who come across goblins actually doing it. There's not a lot of patience for the practice around here.
Smoke still billowed in distant columns, flickering red-orange inside. The late fall chill was intense, the flame-whipped winds piercing.
Christ, what the hell is the army doing out here?
You haven't figured it out? Fob Frontier is a bridgehead in the Source. You're in occupied territory.
We're conquering the Magic Kingdom?
Magical suppression occurs when a latent individual crosses his own current with that of another latent individual, effectively interdicting the magical flow. It is a concentrated effort. If the suppressor's latency is weaker than the individual's he is acting against, a breakthrough may occur, resulting in ineffective suppression. Some interviewees have described this sensation as painful or exhausting. Skill and training can compensate for this to some degree, but in the end, it is a matchup of strength. Some sock sorcerers devote their entire careers to suppression. These master suppressors rarely find a current they are unable to lock down. Avery Whiting, Modern Arcana, Theory and Practice.
Britain didn't bother trying to sleep. He lay on his cot, staring at the corrugated metal ceiling and remembering his mother. His mind returned to her eyes, staring at him in horror and realization. The 158th, his mother, Dawes. He had lost them all. He gripped the coarse blanket, bawling it in his fists. Was this his life from here on?
It can't be. You've got to get out of here.
His mind returned to the ATTD, holding him as surely as if he were surrounded by bars.
Find a way. You have to find a way to get that thing out.
The next morning, Britain found the inside of the chow hall was much as he'd come to know from other bases. Long tables backed up to a line of metal trays piled high with steaming slop that could scarcely be called food. The line was manned mostly by goblins in paper hats who endured the sullen looks of their customers with resignation. Britain got himself a foam tray piled high with a yellow slurry that roughly approximated eggs and some sausage patties as chewy as old spare tires, then sat at a bench that quickly cleared of other occupants as soon as they saw his uniform. A moment later, Truelove appeared and sat across from him.
Good morning. You fill out your timesheet?
Timesheet?
You're not a soldier anymore. Contractors get their timesheets audited daily. Make sure you fill yours out like clockwork or Fitzy will have your ass. Apparently, there's a new admin colonel here. He's a real hard ass about accounting, and he comes down hard on Fitzy when things slip. Fitzy always makes sure it rolls downhill to us.
When do I meet this famous Fitzy?
It's 0615, which gives you 15 minutes. There's a terminal in the MWR where you can do it electronically. Just put in your social security number and 8 hours for yesterday. Make sure you do it before bed from now on.
Britain sat at the terminal in the Morale, Welfare, and Recreation tent, struggling with the irony of filling out a timesheet in the middle of a war zone. He was still laughing to himself as he stepped out of the tent and nearly bumped into a man who more than made up for his lack of height and sheer muscle. His head was shaved as bald as Britain's, gleaming in the rising sun as if it had been oiled. A tight mustache was parked on a stern upper lip. Dark, deep-set eyes stared into Britain's, showing a hint of amusement. The hard line of a mouth was all business. The man wore a Shadow Coven uniform, the Intertech logo noticeably absent. Instead, the striped bar of a chief warrant officer adorned the peaked ball cap. Britain could feel a slight magical current off him. A suppressor's armored fist, gripping its clutch of lightning bolts, marked the left of his shirt. A star crowned the fist, a laurel wreath spanning beneath.
Morning, novice. I'm Chief Warrant Officer Fitzsimmons. You can call me God or Sir, whichever's easier. Got your timesheet filled out?
Yes, I...
Sir, you better get used to it. You'll be saying it a lot. Did you fill in the proper task number and authorization account for each day worked?
Sir?
I take your charming but clueless expression to mean that you have no idea what I'm talking about.
I saw those fields on the timesheet, sir, but I didn't know what codes to put in.
And why the hell not, novice? Surely you've read sections 9A and B in the manual that I left on the rack in your hooch. Had you bothered to perform the requisite reading required by your job, which, might I remind you, your conditional pardon depends on, you would have found those sections entitled Timekeeping in 24-point font.
Sir, that manual was enormous. I didn't have a chance to...
Is that a fixed or a rotary wing whine I'm hearing, novice? Do you honestly think I give a rat's ass for whatever bullshit excuse you care to mind at this particular moment? Ooh, I was really tired, sir. That manual is just too big, sir. Like I give a fuck about any of that.
Yes, sir. I'll go check the codes in the manual right now.
Britton had barely taken a step when the chief warrant officer slapped him in the back of the head.
I was warned that you weren't very smart. I also heard that you assaulted a chief petty officer last night in an effort to assist a damned goblin. You also used your magic under unauthorized circumstances before we'd had a chance to enroll you in the SAS. Not off to a very good start, novice. So no, you don't get to go check the manual now. Instead, you get to do 50 push-ups, and I'd like to hear you say sir at the end of each count-off. On my deck right now!
You've got to be fucking kidding me.
Fitzy kicked Britton hard in the knee. As Britton doubled over, he grabbed his neck and slammed a knee into his stomach.
Count off, novice! I don't have all damn day! Fuck you!
Fitzy leaned down and pressed a fingertip into the base of Britton's neck. Pain blossomed into numbness. Britton's face dropped into the mud and Fitzy held it there. Just when he felt he would choke, Fitzy let him lift it a few inches.
Count off!
Britton got his arms underneath him, but his veins felt full of lead. He managed one agonizing push-up.
One.
One what, novice?
One, sir.
That's better. The agreed number was 50.
Two, sir.
Britton thought of air and how badly he wanted it. His peripheral vision filled with onlookers, but he swallowed his pride and channeled his rage and humiliation into his arms.
32, sir.
You still owe me 18, but I'll collect later, novice. On your feet. We have an understanding.
Absolutely, sir.
Outstanding, novice. About half a click down that way, you'll find another checkpoint. The guard there will let you in. There's a muster field just beyond it. You've already met Downer and True Love. Form up with them when you arrive. Any questions?
No, sir.
Much better, novice. That mud looks fantastic on you. It's an outstanding reminder of the fact that I am your government customer, and a very demanding one at that. I'm going to expect top-notch customer service from you, and you wouldn't want me to have to let your project manager know that I'm dissatisfied with your performance, would you?
No, sir.
Make tracks, novice. I'll meet you there shortly.
Britton trudged through the ankle-deep mud down the track beyond. It wasn't the beating that angered him most, though he felt his magic surge at the thought. It was the comment about defending Marty. Britton already had an inkling of the status goblins held at the FOB, and it felt far too close to the way selfers were treated in his own world. So far, Marty appeared far more decent than most of the humans he'd met on the FOB. At the end of the track, a small plywood booth held a single sock guard. The area beyond was screened by two corrugated metal doors on wheels, topped with barbed wire and protruding from ad hoc walls of concrete blast barriers and piles of sandbags. A huge yellow sign hung from one of them, bearing the SOC arms. Restricted area, appropriately badged SOC personnel and contractors only. Absolutely no foreign nationals or source indigenous contractors permitted without escort. Britton cleared the mud off his badge, but the guard was already opening the gate at the sight of his uniform. Britton stepped past and into a broad field, nearly stumbling as his feet touched hard ground. Beyond the gate, the earth was dry and smooth as a hardwood floor. The area before him looked like a holiday campsite, with 10 low, star-shaped buildings clad in cheap vinyl siding, abutting a parade ground. Each entrance was marked by a swinging brown sign. Britton scanned them. One read, Coven 6, Camelopardalis. Below that, in smaller script, nothing is beyond our reach. Beneath the writing was a stylized image of a giraffe stretching its long neck toward an apple on a branch. Coven 5 bore the image of a belching furnace with the words, Fornax, hell hath no fury. Coven 7 fielded the image of a swan, beneath which was written, Cygnus, grace under fire. Here was an arrow in flight. There, a peacock with feathers spread in a glorious sunburst. The Covens had begun to assemble.